Remind me of the guy we had with the Oilers, Rossovich, Tim Rossovich.
Oh, yeah.
When he went to the...
Crazy guy, right?
Yeah. But he was the one that had the race. He was going to race when he was in Philadelphia. And I told you that story.
He was going to race...
He was going to race one of the guys. It was a big deal. They were going to race to see who was the fastest. And he came out and had it, opened a can of motor oil and drank it. He was going, run. So he took a can of motor oil and drank it and went, and he walked up the line and everybody was falling out laughing, and they you know, said go, and the other guy was still at the line laughing.
Yeah, he was crazy.
He was the one that went in the ice machine.
Yeah,
when I walked in the training room one day, there's a great big ice machine, you know. And you hear this voice, it goes, help, help. And you're looking around, help, help. You go over the ice machine and you open the door and he's covered with all that ice inside the ice machine. And then we also had those tub, you know, what they call them?
Cold tub, yeah. Like.
Yeah. But they were those round tin ones.
Yeah.
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 We had those. And he'd do a front, they were built down low. He'd do a front flip into them. I mean.
Yeah, he was insane.
Very little.
I'm Wade Phillips.
And I'm Les Phillips. We're past and present coaches here to bring you an insider's perspective on the teams, the people, and the personalities that we've encountered over time.
Continuing with kind of our team-specific episodes, where we talk about specific places that you've worked, or in this case that both of us worked, we're moving on to America's team, the Dallas Cowboys.
All right. Everybody wants to hear about the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we're going to tell it all, right? Or most of it. We'll see.
Well, so 2007, we were both, you were hired as the head coach, and obviously I was... You hired me as quality control, but that was after your stint as a defensive coordinator for the Chargers.
Right.
And what was that interview process like? Were you in the room? Was it Jerry and Steven? How did that go? What's your memory of that process?
Yeah, it was Jerry and Steven. They brought me into Dallas, and then we went back, actually in Jerry's office, way in the back of the building there. It's a big office, obviously. Big area, but we sat in there and really didn't talk on the board, you know, but just talked about football and what my overall concepts were. And we talked for, I don't know, it could be 3 hours, I'm sure, at least, talking about what you do if this happened, what you do if that happened. They had a lot of scenarios, you know, to go through that, and then what I thought of their team and their players. We went over their players that they had right then. Just, you know, almost everything you could go through as far as trying to be a head coach. You know, they were real thorough about that. I thought the interview was, again, it was a long interview, but I thought they covered almost everything you want to cover. They went through practices during the season, off season. Now, the whole off season program wasn't set at that time the way it is now. And actually the off-season program we went, we implemented there was picked up by the league, and that's pretty much the off-season program now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know that. Now, it took you quite some time to, you know, kind of get the, obviously the interview must have gone well. You were hired, but I remember it taking, you know, they talked to a lot of different coaches at that point. They were coming off of the, you know, the Bill Parcells years. I remember, you know, you feeling good about it, but said, I think it went really well, but, and Jerry said it went well, but.
Right, and they call me periodically. Jerry would call me periodically and say, well, everything's going okay, you know. And so, I mean, we're not hiring anybody yet, but you're not out of it, which, you know, I think we went at least a week one time and nothing was said, you know, and you get a little nervous. And he called me, and of course every call, I thought, well, he's going to give me the job, or he's not. He's going to say, no, you're not getting the job. But he'd say, well, you're still in it. We still have some other people to talk to, but, you know, we're really impressed. And so that's how it went.
What do you think, I mean, do you have any feelings as to what eventually kind of pushed you over the edge as far as, you know, being the choice?
You know, I'm not sure. You'd probably have to ask Jerry and Stephen overall. I'd had some experience. I think that helped. You know, I had experience being head coach in Denver and then also in Buffalo. And then really my Buffalo years, I mean, record-wise were pretty good, so... You know, I think that was part of it. They wanted somebody with experience. They just had a guy with experience, obviously, with Parcells. And I think they liked that. I think that's part of what helped me.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned some of your previous stints. You know, you've actually, I'll go ahead and mention this because it kind of bothers me. I don't know how you feel about it, but there's the narrative for Wade Phillips that he's a great defensive coordinator and an awful head coach, you know, just the worst possible head coach, but he's a great defensive coordinator. And, you know, it kind of irritates me some because I do know that, you know, if you're not talking about interim records, you're right around 60%, I think, as a win percentage as a head coach. I don't know the exact number there, but I think there's a misconception of how much coaches are actually winning.
Right, yeah. And
in the NFL.
You know, if you've got at least 100 games coach as an NFL coach, head coach. So, yeah. Yeah, people think, and I've added to that, certainly, when I've said it several times, you know, I wasn't a great head coach, but I feel like I'm a pretty good defensive coordinator. I've said that several times, and I think a lot of people have taken that, you're a lousy head coach. You know, I don't feel like I was, but like you say, I think there are percentages that you could look into and say, hey, you know, he wasn't that bad.
A lot of the other coaches that those types of comments get made about he's a great coordinator but terrible as a head coach. I mean, if you really look at their record and you see, you're talking very, I mean, there are guys who had horrible head coaching stints, right? And, you know, your teams have never, aside from last year in Dallas where we start out 1-7, but, you know, you went to the playoffs 5 different occasions. I think ultimately, you know, with you, if you would have won one of those playoff games, one more of those playoff games, yeah, at some point, now your legacy could be entirely different as a head coach, but you still coached enough and had enough success to go to the playoffs 5 times.
Right, and 8.5 years, I guess you'd say. Yeah, I mean, again, I think you're judged on a great head coach if you win more in the playoffs. You know, I think that was my downfall as far as being a great head coach. Honestly, yeah, I had a winning record. If you compare me with somebody that was a lousy head coach, well, then most of them had losing records. I did have a winning record, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah, well, it's hard to do. We all know that are in the business. I think Belichick's career winning percentage now, you know, obviously 6 Super Bowls, but I'm talking about, you know, who I think both of us would consider maybe the best to do it. I think his winning percentage is 67% throughout his career. So, I mean, you know, there is kind of a perception that the greatest coaches are winning 90, 80, 70% of their games when that's just...
too hard to do that. It's too hard to do that for anyone.
Right. So anything interesting or noteworthy about when you finally do get the call and Jerry calls you? It had to have been a pretty cool moment to get that call, and I'm sure Jerry was fired up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He makes decisions. He's a decision maker, and he was, I know he's feeling good about it. And of course, I was feeling real good about it because it was maybe a month of waiting. On my part, we didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And then certainly we didn't know what was going to happen at San Diego at that time, because we'll talk about that. But when I left and Cameron got the Miami job, and I think he got the Miami job before I got the Dallas job, but it's pretty close in there. But anyway, yeah, it was really exciting and couldn't wait to tell your mom and you and Tracy, and especially my dad and my mom. So it was exciting, and my dad was glad to get me back to Texas. You know, we talked about him. He didn't want to leave Texas and never had. So So he wanted me back in Texas.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your dad, this was the first time that you and I had a chance to work together, work on the same staff. How was that? I mean, it was obviously special for me. I mean, it was an opportunity to get in the NFL, which was great, but to be with you, to be with mom, to be around family, to go back to Texas where we have a lot of family was really special. But as far as just the working part of it, how was that, just knowing that you were able to get me with you?
Yeah, that was interesting because when my dad hired me, and maybe we talked about it, but when my dad hired me, he just called me up and said, "You're coming to the Oilers. Come on." I don't know that I did the same way with you. I would like to. I'd like for you to kind of go over that with what happened when I called you at Baylor.
Well, I do remember we came out for the press conference, and I was at Baylor, so it was a short drive. And I do remember all of this going down, the press conference. We ended up eating at Jerry's house that night, but you kind of paused. And at one point, you know, you had a lot going on, obviously, and we were just so happy for you. And you're like, "Hey, I'm going to try to get you here if it's possible. And I just said, "Hey, don't worry about me. Just want this to be your day." And it was a really exciting time for me. And then finally, when you did bring me, I mean, I did actually, I think it was, they probably knew it was kind of a given, but I was interviewed by Jason Garrett and Tony Sperano was in the room as well. So they got to hear a lot about the air raid offense, right, that we were running at, you know, at both West Texas and then Baylor when I was coaching the quarterbacks. Kind of went through a lot of that, and it was an interesting position for me because it was my first time in the league, first time as a quality control coach where you're doing a lot of the behind the scenes work, and I didn't really have any history of doing a lot of the things that I was asked. I mean, when I got there, Jason Garrett had coached quarterbacks for 2 years prior to being the offensive coordinator. And, you know, most places, if you go somewhere, someone's got at least a template of a playbook, you know, at least from somewhere else. You know, they were a QC or whatever it may be. They have some of the pictures that are drawn or some of the just general information. You're talking about cadence and huddle and at least something you can work off of. But I got there and that was my first offseason there. It was really working with Jason very closely and putting together one of these playbooks from scratch. And, you know, anyone who's seen one of these NFL playbooks knows the size of these things. I mean, these are 1,000-page books is really essentially what they are, you know, with a combination of writing, drawing, all that sort of thing. So definitely my busiest off-season I've ever been a part of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big job. Speaking of Jason, after I got the job, you know, everybody wants to know, but the Jerry said, I had Jason Garrett here before. I think he's a great coach, and he is the offensive coordinator. He didn't say I want him to be. He is the offensive coordinator. I hope you're fine with that. And I said, well, no problem. I mean, again, you know, he had had him before. I trusted his judgment. And you can say what you want. When you came in and he took over, we had a good offense. Of course, Tony Romo and T.O. was there, and we could talk about all that too, but we did have a good offense. And part of it was having that big book to be able to go through. With my dad, you know, he hired me as a linebacker coach, but they already had a notebook and all that stuff. I know we didn't have quality control people anyway, so we did basically our own part of it. So I did the linebacker part, or made sure the drawings and all that were. When I came in, there was another coach. My dad didn't hire me after his first year as head coach, until after his first year as head coach.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little different also.
Just bringing up Jason Garrett, mentioning the offense in general, we did have a good offense for the time we were there. You know, Romo put up career numbers. Obviously, that was kind of, I think he had started the year before maybe, but he was coming into his own, and we had some good weapons. But I have heard, and I know that there's kind of a certain section of Cowboys fans who may say that Jason Garrett somehow sabotaged you in order to become the head coach himself. I mean, I have some opinions on that, but
there's always conspiracy theories everywhere, you know, from JFK to where, you know, a lot more after that. So no, I don't feel that way at all. And I think he's like any coach. I mean, you do the best you can do, and somebody else makes a decision and says, hey, you know, this guy's gone. Because it happened to me a couple of times. I mean, three times I was an interim head coach. You know, they fired the coach during the season, and they made me the coach. Well, I wasn't stabbing anybody in the back or talking about what was wrong or what was right, and that I could do a better job. So I don't feel like other people did the same thing. And I knowing Jason, he's not that kind of guy, really. I think the only thing that came up, and you could probably attest to it, when he took over, he said things are going to change now. Well, people took that as, well, why didn't we change before?
Sure. I'd like to talk about, at some point, when that change occurred. But the thing that I've always said, people have tried to say, oh, Jason, he, and I've always said, like, if he was good enough to sabotage somehow the offense to where he could get the head coach fired, but yet he's the offensive coordinator and still become the head coach, then we know he's smart, he's Princeton, you know, but he's the smartest coach ever, and everyone should be trying to hire him. If you could actually pull that off, you know, yeah. where I'm gonna do some things, even though I'm the offensive coach, that are not gonna make me look bad enough to where they wouldn't want to hire me and somehow get the job. I mean, I think it's silly, really.
It is, and all you conspiracy Dallas Cowboy fans, I hope this settles it for you, but I'm sure it won't, because they don't believe it now.
Right. But we kind of started off with a bang in 2007. I mean, we came in and, you know,
oh, yeah.
I mean, 13-3 season, 13 Pro Bowlers that year. That was a NFL record. I don't know if that's been broken since, but we had some talent, some weapons. We kind of had some momentum. We make the divisional round. End up losing to the Giants that 17-21 game. But that one hurt. I remember we had beaten the Giants twice that year, but by over 10 points, double digits, I think, both games.
Right, yeah. We had a lot of confidence going in, which we should have. One of the things I remember about the game itself was before the game, I went to the officials and I said, look, DeMarcus Ware is tremendously quick getting off the ball. And I said, we've had several situations where they called him offside, and then when we turned it in that week, they said, no, he wasn't offside. And I'll be darned if the first series of the game, early in the game, it was third down, and they called him offside. We had stopped him, gave him a first down, and they went down and scored a touchdown, which obviously was a difference in the ball game. So I learned the hard way, just don't tell the officials anything, because you know, you tell them the other team's doing it, well, they're going to call it on you. If you tell them, you know, something about your guys, they still call it on you. And I don't think, again, it's not conspiracy. They're calling what they think they see. And unfortunately, officials had the same problem with DeMarcus. They thought he was offside when he wasn't, because he was so quick off the ball.
Well, yeah, I mean, a guy like DeMarcus, there really were times, I remember that year, where we weren't necessarily arguing that they made the call always, you know, during the game, and then you actually watch the tape and watch it in frame by frame, slow motion, and he was just getting off so fast that it was too fast for the human eye.
Well, he moved faster than everybody else on the defense, and I think that drew attention to him. But the reason he was is he had such great reaction time, and that's why he's certainly a Hall of Famer. And that's one of the reasons he's there, will be there as far as Hall of Fame is concerned.
Well, I did think, you know, looking back, that we had a nice draft that year, too. The Anthony Spencer pick was a great pick. I mean, he was a really good player before. I mean, a great player. Nobody was blocking him on the edge in the run game and then, of course, pass rush. But we took Doug Free as well. We took Nick Folk in the sixth round. Alan Ball played a lot of ball. But really had some nice picks in there. The whole time we were there, those 3 years at least, there were a lot of trades. You know, Jerry's kind of known for those trades. I mean, are you a believer in kind of all the draft day trades going up, going back?
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's very active in the draft, and he, as you know, I mean, he has a good feel for what the whole conglomerate of your staff likes or don't like. I mean, he doesn't watch all the film himself, but he has a feel for who everybody likes. And so if there's a guy that he feels like there's a big need, then he's going to try to go get him. The trading back, you get more picks, certainly. I thought there was one year in there we traded back so much we kept not getting a player that we needed.
Right.
I mean, I think sometimes trading back, you don't get the player you wanted there, and then he's not there when you trade back, and then you keep trading back for lesser players. But overall, I mean, I think our drafting process was good. Jerry listens to everybody, but he listened to the head coach. If I had somebody I liked or didn't like, and actually the year we took Felix Jones.
Yeah, we had Julius when we first got Julius there.
Yeah. When we got Felix Jones, that year I questioned that pick, and he went to all the scouts, and they said, no, he's the best one. So I did question that one because there were a couple of other backs that I liked. But other than that, we were pretty much on the same page throughout the time I was there as far as the draft's concerned.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. I mean, about Jerry listening, everyone knows that he's in charge and he's going to make the final call. But he does listen to scouts, coaches. I mean, he takes in all the information. He's not a dumb person. He's not going to just take it over himself and say, I'm going to do what I want to do. I mean, he's going to take in all the information he can and try to make the best decision he can make from that. And I know, at least with the draft, I know there's been times where the scouts have kind of swayed him away. You know, the famous one was the Randy Moss thing. This was before us, but I think they convinced him to take him off the board, or, you know, there were some character concerns coming out of college, and then, you know, he ends up torching the Cowboys, and I think that maybe shaped some of the time we were there, those types of decisions where players that we didn't take. He's kind of been an owner that takes chances on players, at least when we were there. Pac-Man Jones, Tank Johnson, you know, I mean, those types of players, Randy Gregory in more recent years. I mean, they have taken some players with pass, and how did you feel about signing guys that maybe have had some issues in the past? And we all know that sometimes those guys are still great guys. I mean, sometimes they're not. But, you know, how did you feel about bringing in more guys who may have had some red flags?
There's such a fine line in there. I mean, talent is so important in the game. You know that. And some of these guys you're talking about were really talented players and could contribute. Now, whether they did or not or didn't, T.O. is certainly a famous one that we had and obviously contributed.
Big time, yeah.
But Jerry's the kind of guy that believes that somebody can, he believes in people a lot, you know, and which I agree with, that, you know, if they get the right situation, especially if your team is a kind of team that can handle that type thing, and he always felt like, and I felt like our team was that kind of team, that would try to do the right things. You had the real leaders, I mean, the Jason Wittens, or even Brady James on defense, and Romo, and I mean, on and on, Marion Barber, players that were really above any wrongdoings. So, you know, you had good examples to go by, and good guys that would influence you in their way rather than you influencing them if you were going the wrong direction.
Well, a couple guys you mentioned there, I don't want to skip over this. Romo and Witten were, and I believe Bobby Carpenter, so we were talking about 2007 and the divisional playoff game against the Giants. Of course, we had the bye week before that, and kind of the big storyline in the bye week was that those guys went to Cabo.
The week before.
During our bye. Did you have a conversation with any of those guys, Romo or anyone, or
no,
was it?
I mean, I told everyone they had the weekend off. So, I mean, some of them went to Colorado or to visit their parents or wherever they went. You know, they want to pick out those guys who actually played good in the game. And if you remember the game, I believe we had like 360 yards and they had like 240. I mean, the stats were way our way. We didn't win the game. Stats don't win a game for you. But if you look at the stats, you'd say we dominated them.
Sure.
I don't think those guys played bad because of that. In fact, both those guys had a pretty good game.
Well, yeah. I mean, the people that did go to visit their families in other states, you know, or whatever they did, probably got much less rest and relaxation than that crew that probably had a private jet and well, went straight down to Cabo and just were on the beach before anyone else could get through security at the airport.
Yeah, sometimes just staying home with your little kid all the time that you're not used to. It's going to wear you out.
More exhausting. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I did think it definitely wasn't the best for perception-wise.
But it was after the loss. That's when all this came out. After we lost the game, let's figure out a reason. I'm not for that. Everybody knew that, well, then if we knew that everybody was on the same page, we'd have said, hey, you know, don't go anywhere. But it still would have been the same game, I think.
I don't think that it had anything to do with the outcome of the game. I agree with that. There's such a spotlight on you as a quarterback in the NFL, and then you as a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm sure Tony would probably say, hey, looking back, just because of the reaction to it, maybe. But of course, winning solves everything. And if we would have won the game, then, you know, it never would have been an issue in the first place.
Well, I do think it helped him because he got a Corona commercial on the beach there, you know. He has that. I still see that. So maybe that was part of getting it.
Maybe so. Down there with Jessica Simpson at the time, who he was dating. So we had such a good feeling after the 2007 season, not obviously how it ended, but there was a lot of hope and expectations going into the 2008 year. And in 2008, we ended up going 9-7. We're third in the NFC East. I think we lost the last four games of the year to finish 9-7. The last game was the 44-6 loss to the Eagles at their place. I mean, it was a bad feeling. I was actually in the press box, coach's box for the games those years. And when you're in Philadelphia and the Philly fans know that their seats are right under the box because, I mean, it's directly underneath you where you can – I had to kind of try to keep my eyes from averting down and looking at the fans because they kept turning back because they were killing us. I mean, it was just the worst feeling I remember. You know, they kept turning back, looking at us and cheering, pointing at us, and you're just trying to keep your eyes level and straight, looking right over them to the field like you don't notice whatsoever. But looking back, do you have any feelings about that year? And
if you remember that last game, Philadelphia, I think there was a scenario like if three teams lost and they won, they would have a chance to get in the playoffs. Well, it was a night game. All three of those teams lost right before they came out on the field. That's when I've always realized it, but that's when you really realize that momentum and excitement about playing the game are so important, because now the game became monumental for them just as they're coming out of the dressing room and they're jumping up and down and going crazy and so forth, and they played like that. So, if you can get your team to be excited about every game like that, I mean, you're gonna win more than you lose. Certainly, you're going to win a lot of games. They played beyond, and part of it was, or I thought a big part of it was, just the enthusiasm they had, knowing all of a sudden, hey, we didn't think we had a chance at all. Now if we win, we're in. And that's exactly what happened, and they played really great about that. You know, we went 9-7. I got fired at 8-8, and 7-9 and 9-7. I could have got fired, I guess, at 9-7.
Well, yeah, there were some because we still had a strong start, and then obviously didn't finish and didn't make the playoffs and ended up third in the NFC East. There were some calls at that point for.
Oh yeah, well, it's just like anywhere. I mean, your expectations a lot of times are what in our business get you fired.
Well, yeah,
because it happened. It even happened with, them winning a Super Bowl. Jerry Still fired Jimmy Johnson. So there's a lot of reasons for it. So, but the expectations are so high that at any place when you win, and then that's what I always say to people, and I'm just kidding, but your first year, don't do real great your first year, because they're going to expect more each year.
Well, yeah, and the high expectations, low production is the recipe for getting fired as a coach in the NFL. As a coach, we always want the lower expectations. We want to have a great team, but no one really think that we're going to be great, and so we can surpass the expectations. But then the next year, of course, they go up. And as a coach, you never really build up any equity no one ever says, well, look what happened, look how we were before they got here, or whatever it may be. At any level, if you take a program and you raise the level of the program, no matter what, everyone expects more from that level now. And they don't look back. And, I see it all the time in college as well. Some of these coaches that have done a great job at smaller programs or whatever it may be. I mean, eventually, the guy at Iowa State, right, they all love Campbell. Eventually, if he keeps winning enough, it won't be enough for the people there. They'll expect more. Why aren't we competing for this now? Why aren't we? I mean, that's just the way it goes.
That's right. That's life in football. That's for sure.
We did do Hard Knocks in that 2008 training camp. They kind of spotlighted, some different guys. Pac-Man Jones was one of those guys. Him trying to kind of resurrect his career after some trouble in Cincinnati, I guess. Danny Amendola was one of our practice squad players that year.
Yeah.
We actually drafted some good players. You mentioned Felix Jones for that season, but, Mike Jenkins played for a long time, and of course Martellus Bennett, maybe the most talented tight end to ever play the game, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I mean,
he was a real talent.
I mean,
he was.
Yeah, just, and then of course Orlando Scandrick, we got in the fifth round, who had a really nice career as well.
Yeah, that was a funny one in that we talked to his coaches, and for some reason they didn't like him in college. And again, Jerry, not only listened to the scouts and coaches and so forth, but we brought players in. If you remember, when we brought players in, you could bring in so many players. And he had a private room that he would talk personally with them and got a feel for that too. And I think, and we do that as coaches too at the combine and so forth. You talk to different players and try to get a feel for basically what kind of person they are, what kind of attitude they have about life or in football. And Jerry did a lot of that. And I think it helped him a lot in his evaluation, not just from what he heard, how much he heard from the scout or a coach, but also just a feel for what kind of kid or what kind of person this guy is.
Yeah, he did do that. Not many owners are doing anything like that. I mean, obviously he is the GM. My take on the whole Jerry's the GM, I mean, is, he's an oil guy, he's not a football guy. Businessman that's not a football guy, I mean, that's the kind of stuff you hear. He bought the team in, 1989, 1988?
Yeah,
89. So, I mean, he's going on, 35 years in the NFL of watching football and being parts of transactions. And how long does it take to become a football guy? I mean, he was also a college football player, won a national championship at Arkansas as a starting guard. What do you have to do to become a football guy? I mean, I'm going on year 15, so I guess I've got another 30 years. Maybe when I hit 42, like you did, I can be a football guy.
Well, and again, he talked to players, he talked to coaches, and he talked to scouts and stuff about every draft he went through. I mean, certainly you just learn something from osmosis, but he's a smart guy anyway. We know that. Smart business guy is still a smart person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we go into our 2009 season. So we kind of had there's some pressure now, right? You go 9-7, you miss the playoffs, doesn't end well the season, and get back on track. End up being 11-5. We get first place in the NFC East. Still end up going to a wild card appearance against the Eagles, which, out of your playoff appearances, this was your first playoff win. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We beat the Eagles 34-13, and kind of why I mentioned previously playing those guys, like, it felt great because we swept those guys three games that year, and we played them to get in the playoffs the previous week at their place, and then came back for the divisional round, and I think it was 24-0 when we beat them at the end of the season, and then we played them back to back. And then beat him 34-14, and I definitely, I may have said some things I shouldn't have said to those guys that were standing underneath the press box. But sorry, I hope they can't find me after the fact. But
yeah, you remember now, we played Washington, then Redskins, and shut them out the next to last game of the season. Then we shut out Philadelphia. So we had back-to-back division shutouts the last two games of the year. And I mean, pretty phenomenal.
It was. And then we lost in the divisional round to tough Vikings team, 34-3. That was a year where, you know, when you kind of look back, I think that was the year you were talking about where we're trading back. And we didn't have any picks until the third round that year. And we kind of, you know, really didn't hit on a lot of those guys. And then just kind of getting to kind of our wrap up as far as your career, your time in Dallas. I think that, you know, going into 2010, there were, again, high expectations. We've had 2 out of 3 years in the playoffs, you know, lost in the divisional round. And now what happens then? Maybe we didn't hit on some picks. Maybe guys got older, kind of got old fast. Felt like up front, maybe we got old. But we start off 1-7 and they end up firing you after we lose 45-7.
Yeah, it was tough for me after, like I say, back-to-back shutouts, winning a playoff game, which I think it was pretty close to 10 years that the Cowboys hadn't won a playoff game.
Yeah, I think it was an 11-year drought.
Yeah. And I wanted an extension at that time, and Jerry didn't want to give me one. That bothered me. At the same time, I believe it was the same time, that's when Jason Garrett was offered the Baltimore job. And to keep Jason, redid Jason's contract and gave him more money than I was making. And that didn't sit well with me. And I told him that.
Yeah.
And he said, well, we had to do that to keep him, but you didn't want to extend me for, you know. So I don't think we crossed ways or anything like that, but all of a sudden that happens, and then we don't start out well. And we lost some close games early, certainly, and then Tony Romo got hurt. Now, we did play with our backup quarterback that we didn't start well after, you know, after that Green Bay game, which was terrible. But on the flight back, he said, we're going to make a change. And so that's what happened. Yeah.
And that was on the actual flight or his jet? Because sometimes he would take the...
Yeah, most of the away games, he would fly Laurie, your mom, with him, with the family. You were part of the family. I'll say he's a great family guy, along with Charlotte and Stephen and Jerry Jr. Anyway, the whole family. I mean, they take you in as family. But they'd fly Laurie to the games, sit in the box with them, and then a lot of times I would fly back, rather than with the team, I would fly back and talk about the game with him on his private jet going back, so he could discuss the game. Because he is a busy guy. I mean, he does have other businesses, certainly. And so flew back, and I didn't beg him, but I said, can you wait till after the Giants game, you know? And he said no, and I said, well, okay. So.
Well, I do remember being in the visitor's locker room after that game in Green Bay. We knew the tone of the season thus far was tough, and then you lose 45-7. And I do remember you saying, I think that's it. You know, I was like, no, why? You know, and you said, it looks like they gave up or they quit on us. He said, it looks like they quit on us. He said, maybe they did, but either way, it doesn't matter,
right.
You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime it looks like that, and I still think guys play as hard as they can play. They don't want to change coaches, I don't think, overall. I mean, you know, we fumbled a kickoff that we couldn't replay. There wasn't a fumble. I mean, things happened in that game too. So, but anyway, I had that feeling. But, you know, in Dallas, I mean, once things start going bad, I mean, they're all after you. You know, I mean, one of the sports writers, I said, well, you think you can coach them better than me? And he said, yeah, I do. Mm. I mean, this is a sports writer telling me that I had 30 years and I've been a head coach for however long and had a winning record. And this sports writer is telling me that he can coach the team better than I could. So, I mean, that's the attitude. Once the press, and we see it all the time nowadays, once the press goes a certain direction, you know, they influence a lot of people. And so I won't say they're after me, but I do say that, you know, they were real negative.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't look at the whole record, or, you know, that you'd won a playoff game when it hadn't won and things like that. So, and I'm not saying what Jerry did was wrong either. I mean, it's his team. I worked as hard as I could every day for him, and he paid me every day, you know, for my work. So that's just football, pro football.
Well, that is pro football, and it was a lot more. I know we can talk about in the future about obviously the Cowboys and Jerry and some of the things that went on in Dallas, but it was nice kind of just to revisit it with a little perspective.
Yeah, except for the last part.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
All right.